Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast, which teaches you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in sunny Long Beach, California, joined by my good pal, Mr. Scott Fliegelman in Boulder, Colorado. Hello, Scott. How you doing, pal?
Hey, Mike. How you doing today?
I am very, very well. You are freshly back from the national championships in Texas. And we're not going to go into a whole tournament breakdown, but you had a couple of nuggets you wanted to share.
Yeah, disappointingly, I ended up with about half a tournament. I ended up coming back midway through. I got my split age events in. I was unable to play men's and mixed, which is a total bummer. I had to come back for assorted reasons. One day of split age, not a great result, but I learned a few things that I wanted to share with our listeners. And the second day in split age mixed, my partner Jill Braverman and I got a chance to play an amazing match. It seemed like it was 3 hours long, but we played against one of the world's best players in Federico Staxrud, who I am currently 0-1 against in singles, but we are now 1-1.
Nice.
I'm now 1-0 against him in mixed. Jill and I pulled it out 11-7 in the third, super fun match, and then I was out of there. So a little bummer. Looking forward to hopefully a better experience next year.
Well, and that's the thing is like sometimes you never know whether it's weather, whether you're going to, you know, pull a hammy, whether, you know, it's part of the tournament experience to unfortunately have to kind of like, all right, you know what? I got to pack it in for this one. I will, you know, heal if there's a medical thing or maybe the timing will work better for another tournament. You got to just pack it in and, you know, do a mulligan at the next one. So
yeah, I'm with that program and glad we could share. It's not all gravy for sure at these tournaments. But like I said, have a great experience as an instructor, coach, and student of the game. I'm getting my butt kicked by Callan and Steve Dawson, playing with my steady split age men's partner, Ryler DeHart. He and I won bronze at the US Open this year, and we were 0-1 and done against the Dawsons. And they were just better in every aspect of the game. And in particular, it was my first time on court against Callan Dawson. I do feel like I didn't quite get my money's worth because he did not lob me once.
That's what he's known for, right?
He's known for
the lobs, yeah.
But only slightly less known is his just really unique style of dinking where he does not let the ball bounce, go up to its apex, and come back down. He either gets it out of the air or he takes it off the half volley. And I've got to tell you, it's really uncomfortable playing against an opponent who disrupts your rhythm like that. I always felt on my heels. I never felt on rhythm. The ball was always back on me sooner than I expected. I always felt on the defensive. So I wanted to share in this show, and I'm glad you were up for it, what I think is a really valuable play and a couple of different parts of the court that our listeners, especially 4-0 to Pro, need to be incorporating into their game, and that's the half volley.
Well, we've talked about it on this show in the past, which is, and in fact, this came from you originally, which was both of us are right around 5'8", but you said to me once, one of our first sessions together, you said you might be 5'8", but play 6'4". So really get on the kitchen line, be very balanced, be able to reach into the kitchen as far as you can, because it supports something that you and I think is very important in that 4'5" plus range, which is to reduce the time your opponents have to get ready for the next shot. Anything we can do to reduce that time is going to be beneficial to us. And seeing Callan Dawson play, he gets so low and he volleys so many balls that you think are unvolleyable, but he's just way down there and he reduces the time. Normally you're waiting for a ball to come back a split second later or a second or two later, but there it is on you once again. You may not be as balanced as you'd like to be and ready to take that shot.
And then when I try to back him up, try to hit a little bit more penetrating dink, he leans in, gets it out of the air, and he's able to hit an offensive shot. So I was finding myself with no safe landing zone and needed to go in Steve's direction. And Steve's a terrific defensive player. He is one of those players, if you haven't seen Steve Dawson play, has an Eastern or semi-Western forehand grip, and he sits defensively on the forehand. He holds up the lollipop, and his shield is the forehand side of his paddle. And he does an excellent job. You really don't want to speed up in Steve's direction. So we tried to make the ball bounce in front of Steve. He hit great dinks. We had no solution to Callen, and we got our butts kicked, and hats off to them.
I played against Steve at Bobby Riggs in Encinitas, which I think is their home court.
Yeah.
And same thing, was very, well, I was playing with a guy, he was my senior pro doubles partner for my San Clemente event. Like you said, the guy just made things really uncomfortable, did a lot of things that were very different. I mean, Callen Dawson in particular has one of the most different games you'll ever play against. I've never played against him, but even watching him play, he just does things differently than almost everybody else. So it's very difficult to prepare for him. But one of the things he does so well is he hits half volleys all the time. Do you want to define a half volley for the 402P audience?
Sure. Let me put it in context of what I like to call the overall strike zone management plan. We've talked on this show before about move your feet so as to hit the ball in your strike zone, your favorite place to make contact in relation to your body. Unlike baseball, softball, there's no batter's box. No matter what the pitcher throws, you can make it a strike. Many times on the court, that's going to be a thigh high ball, something out in front of you, a little closer to the net. In this case, instead of letting the ball bounce up all the way to its apex and catching it there, or even worse, letting the ball come all the way back down into your strike zone the second time, we're going to get that ball on the rise as it just kisses off the court. When I like to say it has energy on the ball, the ball has juice on it. And as such, we don't need to generate a whole lot of velocity ourselves. In fact, we just need to be a backboard, have a nice firm wrist, adjust the paddle angle, and let that ball just carom off our paddle with minimal movement from us, from the wrist down. Now, what we need to do from a body standpoint is far less simple. Callen, Tyson, JW, these are players who do really great job with half volleys. They're strong, they're stable, they squat beautifully, they lunge really well, they keep their shoulders level. So it's easier said than done. But when they get that ball right off the ground, it has the energy on it, and they don't need a complicated swing with a lot of moving parts.
So this is one of those things, like in baseball, they'd call this a short hop. In pickleball, it's so critically important. We've talked about stable base a million times on the show. I don't know that there's a more important shot to have a stable base, and what's more, a paddle face aimed exactly where you want the ball to go prior to the ball striking it. So if you think about what we would normally get a chance to do, where the ball bounces and we can see the trajectory of the ball, we can adjust our feet a little bit and we can swing through, but we can make these micro adjustments on our paddle face in order to get the ball to go where we want. The challenge of a half volley is, since we're taking the ball a split second after it hits the ground, not only do we have to be super stable, like you said, with a stiff wrist and a very stable base, but that paddle face has to be fairly precise in terms of where we want that ball to go, because it's going there. All of that energy on the ball is already directed. With all of these new thermoformed paddles that have all kinds of pop to them, that ball is going to fly off the paddle face. I am absolutely someone that if I don't half volley perfectly, if I'm, let's say, in the middle of transition zone and somebody hits a ball a foot in front of my feet, so now I'm forced to take this half volley. If my paddle face isn't exactly where it needs to be, the resulting shot is a 6 foot high pop-up that is going to get me and my partner pasted. And that's because there's not a ton of time to redirect to your brain how to adjust the paddle for this particular trajectory. So this is the real challenge with a half volley.
Two things. Keeping in mind, this is not the 3-0 to 4-0 show. We want to challenge our listeners who are playing at a higher level to take on this challenge, that this is a really beneficial shot. But if you haven't already hit 1,000 of them on the ball machine, you've got a date with the ball machine right after this show ends to go practice this shot, because you're going to need micro adjustments of the paddle face angle, and you're going to need trial and error to learn how that's going to work. Then add spin from your opponents, slice or topspin, your paddle angle is going to need to adjust accordingly to not provide a pop-up or dump the ball into the net. Like many shots we talk about on this show, but maybe even more than all of them, this one will really benefit from ample batting practice, ample ball machine time.
So being a drummer, I'm used to putting things into kind of rhythmic columns, if you will. So if I'm dinking rhythmically, I love to let the ball bounce and then my paddle to hit it generally the same amount of time. I get into a rhythm of that, and you see it all the time in the pros. Bounce, hit, bounce, hit, bounce, hit. Well, what happens in the middle of that nice rhythm? Bounce, hit, Bounce hit. That thing where all of a sudden you're taking that time away from your opponent can be really challenging, but it's challenging for both of you. It's really challenging for us on the short hop side, the half volley side, to get the ball to go exactly where we want it. But man, is it effective at getting the ball back on our opponents before they expect it. So that's why it's worth putting the time in. To drill this, I really like when I'm in the middle of the transition zone. We'll get into more drilling probably in a second, but I love when people can feed me a ball where we're standing directly across from each other. They might hit a shallow overhead a foot in front of me, forcing me to have myself in a fully stable position, the top of the paddle facing down towards the ground. And I'm in that shortstop position where I'm trying to defend or trying to scoop up a ground ball. And I'm trying to get the ball to bounce where I want it. And that's kind of what you talked about before. If we don't have a ball machine, have a training buddy, just go there and start railing balls close to your feet, not exactly at your feet and not too far in front. You want them to get that 6 inches, 1 foot in front of you so you can really go through the struggle of adjusting your paddle the right way.
Well, this is one of those interesting shots, Mike, that it's a very similar technique to hitting a half volley with a couple of very specifically different purposes. So to clarify for our listeners, there is a purpose to the half volley at the kitchen line. And we spent most of the show talking about that. To clarify, I find that half volleying a ball when you're in a four-person ritual kitchen exchange keeps you well-positioned, keeps you efficiently in the middle of your area of responsibility so that you're not strolling around, losing your offensive positioning. Watch Tyson McGuffin dink. He just seems to be in the right spot all the time. Callum Dawson as well. And to your point, it really helps force your opponents to be off balance and off rhythm. Getting balls out of the air does this as well, but I find that that ball often misses the sweet spot and ends up falling short into the net. I'd rather half volley a lot of these balls for the same purposes, again, because it has the energy on the ball and tends to kiss off the sweet spot a little bit more. So that's a major area where half volleying is of value. And then as you began alluding to, in the transition zone, in the yellow zone, for a fifth, for a seventh, playing some defense, we've also referenced this before that it's easier to hit a half volley than to take this ball out of the air from 16 feet away from the net. That's one of the hardest shots in pickleball is to reset a ball from the midcourt out of the air.
Especially a low ball. A ball that's shin high is very difficult to reset when it's like shin high backhand. You're 16 feet away, like you said. That's a tough one. It's a tough ball to hit.
Yeah, if you're trying to reset it into the middle of the net, it's an easy ball.
Right.
If you're trying to land it in the kitchen on the other side, it's rather difficult.
Right.
And it doesn't sound right and it comes off wrong and comes off dead. But when you have volley it and your position is, like you referenced, a shortstop or a volleyball player getting ready to dig a spike, and you adjust your feet and your paddle angle to get the ball as it kisses off the ground, it has the energy on it, and you really don't need to do much to redirect that ball other than practice it 1,000 times.
Where do you stand? I play with a couple of people, pretty much try to half volley every single dink they do. Where do you stand on that? That's just how they dink. Because I do feel like when I see Tyson, he'll do 80% what we would consider a quote unquote normal dink, and then he'll half volley a few of them. But it's not the only way he does a dink.
I mean, I've played against Tyson, and he does give you a lot of different looks. There is the half volley where he gets it right off the ground. It comes back at you quicker, and you look up, and he's just standing right in the right spot. So that's awesome. But he'll also take a rather large windup and still hit a soft dink. Then he'll take the same windup, and he'll speed up. So his disguise, his versatility, is one of his biggest strengths at the kitchen line. Callan offers less variety, but he goes back and forth between a half volley and the ball out of the air. And then all of a sudden he's getting a ball. Well, I have to look at his feet. I assume that he's in the kitchen because he's just on top of me, but he's not. You know, he just forced me to hit a ball a little bit deeper and he got that one out of the air. So his mix of half volleys and then leaning and getting balls out of the air is really impactful.
I find myself doing it a bit sometimes on serves. If someone is really deep serving me and I'm running out of room behind me, sometimes I'm forced into a half volley return, and or sometimes it's just the one that makes the most sense as I'm working my way into the kitchen.
Absolutely. And lob serves, you and I are fans fans of them. We're going to see more and more of those out there. And talk about strike zone management. You can let that lob serve bounce, go up to its apex around shoulder high, and then aspire to get it in the strike zone the second time. But frequently the fence or the wall shows up before that ball comes back down. So the best way to go there is the half volley on its way up into your strike zone the first time. I'll take it one step higher on the degree of difficulty level that I don't see frequently, and I'll put this in the advanced category for our 4-0 to pro listener, is as a third shot. Because our returners of serve are also trying to buy themselves time to get to the non-volley zone, and good for them will frequently hit a lofted return of serve. They want us to, as the serving side, let that ball bounce, go up to its apex, give them more and more time to get to the non-volley zone. Sometimes I'm having none of that. I will half volley their return of serve as a third shot drop.
Right.
And try and catch them at their feet, maybe a new school style, or maybe even just a lofted half volley that lands in the kitchen. But I'm going to try to take away the time they were trying to buy themselves with the lofted return, get it just as it comes off the ground, as close to the net as possible. I am not allowed to hit it out of the air, but I can get it right off the ground and try to catch them before they get themselves camped out at the non-volley zone.
I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. Will you at some point, this is coming out, by the way, this is episode 40, Scott, do you believe that? I will ask you at some point in the next week or so on your Boulder Pickleball Instagram, if you could demonstrate what a half volley is for a dink and for a transition zone and for a return of serve.
I will take that challenge. I'll fire up our spin shot ball machine and I will demonstrate as such. It's one of my favorite shots, so I accept the challenge.
I love it. And again, just to reinforce this, easily one of the more difficult shots we've talked about on this show to get it right. This is a thing that really does require a fair bit of practice, unless you're just a crazy super athlete and, you know, you just have it. But it's one of those things that he and I have been playing racket sports forever, tennis and that kind of thing. Half volley was part of the deal. It's like the half volley on an approach shot was just kind of what you did for the same reason. We're just trying to reduce the time it takes our opponent to have to respond to the shot. But in pickleball, I think it's one of the more important shots to be able to hit. It's a really great tool to have in your arsenal. And it can, I think, win you a lot of points as we move to the latter side of that 5.0, 4.0 to 5.0 to pro. You start getting in that 5.0 range, most of the things you start thinking about beyond strategically are, how can I reduce the time my opponent has to hit the ball? That is such a major part of what we talk about. Scott, can you recommend a couple of drills that someone might be able to do for, like, if they have a wall and they don't have a ball machine for this?
Yeah, this is a fairly easy thing to practice on a wall. As Mike referenced, this is not an easy shot, but in some ways it is, because mechanically, this is the least amount of paddle movement that we have on pretty much any shot that we do. It requires hand-eye coordination. It requires good strength and stability, the ability to squat and stay balanced and have a steady base. But yeah, against a wall, starting 7-8 feet away from the wall, we're going to hit that ball in a manner so that it comes right back at our feet, and we can practice forehand and backhand half volleys easily. That ball half volleys back up just slightly above your mark on the wall that's 34 to 36 inches high, comes back to your feet, and you can practice that forehand and backhand no problem. We can also back up and give yourself some midcourt practice. You may need to feed yourself a ball against the wall that comes back 15 feet with some pace on it. And then you're really just working on your midcourt transition zone, yellow zone reset with a ball that comes at your feet. And this is where you're really going to look like a shortstop or a volleyball player digging a spike. Getting in that crouch position with the paddle well below your knees, tip down, and catch that ball just as it comes off the ground, you're not going to need to move your paddle much at all.
One thing I might suggest for you guys, throw a roll of blue 3M tape in your bag. So when you go to some of these courts or go to the local wall, I'd love for you not only to have that, maybe a small tape measure as well, so you can measure the exact amount of height that the pickleball net is. Would love to see you put a square target on the wall, because the target part is the hardest part about the half volley. Once you understand, okay, I need to be really stable and my paddle face needs to be at a certain angle, I think it's harder to figure out where that angle is unless you're actually trying to hit some sort of target. So make an X on the wall, make a square on the wall. So as you're doing this, I think you can go through a dinking drill where you get into a rhythm of dink, and it's the second that thing hits the ground, you can dink it right back, forehand and backhand. Just like Scott said, do the transition ones, but have a target to hit so that you can understand the relationship between how you're positioned, the force of the ball, and the capability of your paddle. Because if you have a thermoformed paddle, you'll have to do even less of the response in terms of a swing than you would if you had sort of a standard non-thermoformed paddle. So, you know, I play with the Carbon 1X. I have to do less than Scott does playing with the Carbon 1, which doesn't have quite as much pop in it. But still, the concept of getting the paddle face really set as the ball is bouncing is difficult to figure out. So it's going to take some trial and error.
Amen, brother.
Amen, brother. And speaking of my Carbon 1X, folks, if you'd like to have yourself a Carbon pickleball paddle, which are lovely and delicious, you can do that by going to Carbon Pickleball, CRBNPickleball.com. You can use the promo code 402P at checkout to get 10% off whatever paddle or whatever accessory you would like on that particular site.
They've got some sweet new bags, don't they?
I was going to say, they've got a rad new bag that hopefully we'll be getting our hands on sooner than later. And this bag is like their tour bag, so it can fit a whole bunch of paddles and shoes and things like that. But it has this sort of built-in sling bag where you can just have an isolated bag with your paddle and a couple of things that you can pull out of the big one. So it's really cool. Anyway, you guys, thank you so much. Go out there, practice some half volleys. Scott, fantastic idea. Thank you for sharing it with us, sir. And you guys go out, have some fun. Keep on rocking. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.